Dateline, June 1938, Boston, Massachusetts. Little Billy steals a copy of Action Comics number 1 from the local newsstand, this making the first free comic book day. He is later arrested and forced to work in the mine. R.I.P. Billy, 1939.
Part of our heritage.
He died of the black lung at age 10.
Oh.
He had 19 children.
By age 8.
This is taking a turn, and it started with a dead child. Enjoy free comic book day, nerds!
This may appear to be only monkey business, but in reality, it's very serious, ladies.
Zero Issues Comic Podcast!
Zero Issues! Zero Issues!
Zero Issues Comic Podcast!
You know what? Other comic book podcasts, they don't talk about the dead kids.
No, they don't.
That's true. That's true. They're cowards.
They don't. Yeah, exactly.
They were afraid.
We're keeping it real. We're keeping it real depressing and real hard for new listeners to get into. The recipe for success.
So welcome to the show.
Yeah, really.
And goodbye forever.
Goodbye forever. Terribly sorry. Obviously, we're talking a bit about Free Comic Book Day, which happened a week and a half ago as of the release date of this episode. So we're late. We're late. But we're not really late because we're talking about, we're not talking about this year's Free Comic Book Day. We're talking about Free Comic Book Day, its history. It's an institution now. It's the 20th year that Free Comic Book Day has.
20 years.
Yeah. Has happened, and that's worth a look back, and it's become such a regular thing and such a regularly successful thing that it's worth celebrating these milestones, I think.
Yeah.
Who are we if we want to put our names on this one?
I'm Merc.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Bri. And we're gonna get into that. First, we have some news for you, some comic book news, and you can join us after hearing this.
Hey, who left all this news out?
Current Zero News Flash.
Welcome to the news. We got a few pieces of news for you. First off, something just a fun time for all. Spider-Man, as we might all know, is turning 60. 60 this year. Which is weird, because he doesn't look a day over late 20s to mid to early 30s. Perpetually, forever. To mark the occasion, Marvel's releasing a special, like, oversized one-shot, Amazing Fantasy number 1000. And, I don't know, that doesn't seem like, I don't think you could look at that as a legacy numbering thing.
No.
No. That's just, we just did this.
Yeah. Just whatever, 1,000, sure.
Let's pick a number. That sounds big, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So that's fine. So it's a giant-sized one-shot releasing in August, and it has a number of high-profile creators attached to it. Neil Gaiman, Armando Iannucci, Jonathan Hickman, Dan Slott, Kurt Busiek, Hoche Anderson, Jim Chung, Rainbow Rowell, Oliver Copiel, Michael Cho, Terry Dodson, and maybe some more. That's a good list of people.
It's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah. And so there's it's sort of like, one of those like one shots where there are a number of stories, like an anthology one shot exploring the past and future of Spider-Man. So I guess Michael Cho is going to be introducing a new villain in their story. There's like a horror adventure from Hoche Anderson, and there's a future love story about Peter and Mary Jane from Dan Slott and Jim Chung, which. Sure. I mean, like, current events in the comics are like, all right, you're going to give us a nice love story between Peter and Mary Jane. Great. Sure. Sure. I'm definitely going to walk into that with optimism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a cover by John Romita Jr. Obviously, he's always there. Always. So that's cool. They also have amazing, what is effectively a legacy numbering, Amazing Spider-Man number 900 in June, which is actually volume whatever it is now, number 6. by Zeb Wells and Ed McGuinness, and it looks like the Sinister Six are going to be involved in some capacity. So, hooray! And yeah, Amazing Spider-Man. There's like a lot of they're teasing a lot of stuff in this new run, and I haven't been following it because I'm just Spider-Man 60. I'm tired. You know, it's like here and there and like what. Anyway, so like, let's just say that there's
and everywhere. Like some exactly. Sort of
gotta get new readers. Gotta get new readers. Come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. So let's just say there was, and I'm not going to spoil it, but I'm sure if you're on the internet and pay attention to Spider-Man, you know that there's like some twist they've done with Mary Jane that has proven controversial yet again. Norman Osborn is apparently, let's just say if you were, they were teasing them getting back together, and let's just say they're pulling the rug once again. Of course they did. Norman Osborn, I guess he's good now, or like he literally had his evil sucked out of him in a previous run, or I don't know, comics. He's like making him.
He had the wavy hair thing fixed, and all of a sudden he went straight. Yeah. Yeah.
It was just, it was pulling, you know.
He and his hair both went straight.
yeah, so he's like making a new
thank you
suit.
For rewording my joke.
You're welcome.
Fight, 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 fight! So he's making him a suit and a glider, a spider glider, which seems like a good development. And then there's a cover that's teasing the return of Gwen Stacy, which I feel like we've seen that move about 85 times in like the last 10 years where they keep teasing, like, Gwen's back! It's like, no. So, I don't know.
Doesn't she have her own book right now?
There's, well, that's the thing. It's
wasn't
like
she
a, literally
dead
a book
longer
based
than she was
on,
ever alive?
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Well, there's like an entire Gwen, like Gwenverse, like Spider-Verse of just Gwen's going on right now as a miniseries. So just like, Gwen's alive. There, you have nothing but Gwen's.
That feels like a, like an exclamation that someone would say, like, Gwen's alive!
Which one? It's a Spidey summer, baby, for better or ill, whatever your preference may be.
It's a sticky summer coming up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, every summer's a sticky summer.
It's true.
My boots are sticky.
The weather has changed. It was cold, and now it's so warm here that I'm just like, my body just can't adjust. I'm just like sweaty and miserable.
I know.
Yeah, all three of us are wearing hoodies.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
But they're light hoodies.
Yes. I'm in a basement.
This summer hoodies. Okay, so for the next thing up, I came across this, and I'll qualify this by saying I found it on Bleeding Cool.
Ha.
So.
Okay.
So, you know.
So take it for what it is.
Maybe.
But reportedly, and it's a really weirdly constructed article that I'm like, it doesn't say, it says it, but it kind of dances around it, but it's basically talking about Conan, and of course, Conan as a property is owned by like what is it like Robert E. Howard Conan Properties,
yeah,
like the actual right. copyright owner or whatever. Marvel had it in the 70s and 80s, and then Dark Horse had it, and then Marvel got it back. Like, whatever, 5 years ago, 4 years mm-hmm. ago, whatever it was.
Mark Horse just, Marvel's just coming for, I said Mark Horse for a second, which is weird. Marvel's
who's
just coming for Dark
Mark,
Horse all around.
Horse.
Yeah. Mark the Horse, Mark Horse.
And his comics.
But he's like, he's a reverse centaur. So that's right. It's just the bottom of a man and the top of a horse.
He's always tipping over.
He is, yeah. Nay. So, the...
Watch him whip.
The story now is apparently Marvel is going to lose the Conan rights.
They just got them.
But part of it is, I think, at least in this article, the way that it's discussed is like in terms of like how long properties are copyrighted, and then they hit a certain point, then they become automatically public domain. I guess between Europe and North America, there's different time lengths. So apparently in Europe, Conan is public domain right now. It's, what is it, like he enters the public domain 70 years after the death of
right.
the author. The U.S. the U.S. is 95 years, mm-hmm. so there's technically still not public domain.
Thanks, Vicky.
It seemed like it seems like almost like two stories. There's that. Okay, so in Europe, they're doing Conan stories, but then when it comes and They get shipped over here. They got changed. And I've actually seen this, and I was like, oh, that looks like a Conan ripoff. They're calling it the Sumerian. They can't call it Conan here.
Oh.
And it actually is Conan. It's not a Conan ripoff, but it's a Conan European comic. But then also, I guess, the current rights owners that were licensing it to Marvel have decided that they're not going to do that, and they're going to... This company, whatever it was called, like Conan Properties International and Cabinet Entertainment, they both own it, or the kind of the same company. They're that, I think we've talked about it before, a Swedish role-playing game publishing house, Target Games, and the CEO, they are all getting together, and they own a lot of the other Robert E. Howard properties, like Solomon Kane and Bran MacMorn and a few others. And they were going to do, like, games and stuff, but apparently they want to do the comics now, so they're yanking it from Marvel.
Oh.
And it's not like, well, next year. It's like, June, you're done.
What? So, that's
weird.
Like, things are done so far in advance that, like, I mean, like, to a degree, right? I'm like, how do they change that so quickly?
But they must have known. They said, there's King Conan 5, which is the 1st of June, and number 6 or of King Conan is on the 6th of July, and that is it.
Wow.
Huh.
Like, as of July, as of the start of July, that's it. So.
So, I can't wait.
Now you know how it feels, Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. It's fine. Disney will just buy that company.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. We're just going to buy Europe.
Yeah.
Just so that we can get the out of public domain.
And now we own Euro Disney.
Son of a...
Insert Euro Itchy and Scratchy Land clip here.
Hello? Itchy and Scratchy Land open for business. Who are you to resist it, huh?
Thank you. Guys, I found the rights to Predator. You guys want to do something with Predator? Eh. Yeah.
Where did you find them?
They were stuck to the bottom of my shoe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Weird.
So, like, we could.
Eh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
It never seems to work out. I think that's how Shane Black found it, too.
All right. Into the trash it goes.
Speaking of things getting thrown out, the CW has had what can only be described as a bloodbath of cancellations, and it's not just comic shows, there's a bunch of other shows I'm not going to get into, because we are a comic podcast, and I don't know, or I don't watch a lot of CW these days, let's just say that. So we heard previously, I think it was in the news previously, they canceled Batwoman and Legends of Tomorrow. They've also officially canceled Naomi after a single season, which I hear they're going to try to shop around somewhere else. I mean... You know, there's a number of reasons. There's a source
if
that is saying...
If only they had some sort of streaming service.
Well, yeah, exactly. But and actually, that's part of why I think that a lot of these things are getting canceled, is that they were very profitable thanks to a lot of streaming deals they had, as well as, like, foreign sales, which have all kind of dried up. Like, they had a deal with Netflix that ended, like, 2 or 3 years ago, and then, like, a lot of, like, the foreign sales have, like, gone down, and I guess that meant, like, billions of lost revenue compared to before. And of course, CW has under new ownership, or will be very shortly. So, you know, they're kind of cleaning house, you know, and trying to redo everything. So, yeah, as far as like that, the DC CW shows, there's not going to be a ton left, it looks like. Though there will be one more, which would be Gotham Knights, which got officially picked up, I think, a couple weeks ago for full series.
And Flash 2, more crying.
Yeah, more crying. More crime, more crime.
The Wander years.
Yeah.
He just cries really fast, that's all.
Yeah. Grant Gustin is just, he's visibly chained to a pole on set. He can't leave.
What if he goes even faster?
Gotham Knights,
course,
which is
faster.
Anyway, Gotham Knights, which is a show about a bunch of punk kids filling in for Batman, who is dead, I guess.
Dead!
which is got picked up. I guess they filmed their pilot or whatever. They filmed some stuff and they had like kind of a rap thing, and is picked up for a full series. Producer Jonathan Gabay, I don't know how to pronounce that. He shared a bunch of behind the scenes photos, and one of interest was like a prop or a set piece or like a costume piece. Is Batman's cowl. And hold on to your hats, guys. This is big news. It's blue. It's blue.
Oh.
It's not dark blue either. It's like blue. It is a blue cowl. Blue cowl. This is not a drill. Blue. Blue.
Guys,
blue.
Guys, we gotta stop the show. We gotta go. We gotta tell everyone. Guys, there's a blue cowl. There's a blue cowl, everybody.
Yay.
Welcome to the warm-up.
In the news, you're like, we're a comic book podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I don't know about that. We're not going to talk about that. So what are we going to talk about in the warm-up? A movie that has nothing to do with comics. Just because I watched it and it's so dumb, I just need to tell the world about it.
We don't need to follow our own rules.
I stumbled on this on Netflix. I think it was just recently added to Netflix. I had never heard of this. This is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie called Desert Heat. Hmm. Although I think in Europe it's called Inferno. And I'm looking at IMDb and it also says AKA Coyote Moon. So it's got three titles. Oh, Coyote Moon! Oh, yeah. It's almost Coyote Ugly Moon, mm-hmm. but
go on.
Not quite. Less dancing. This is chock full of people you would know. Danny Trejo is in it.
Ooh.
Pat Morita. Jamie Presley. Larry Drake plays the bad guy.
I don't know that one.
He played Darkman.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
Yeah. The worst piece of casting. I'm going to say the name, and you might not know the actor by the name. Vincent Schiavelli?
Yeah, I know him.
He's a very distinct face. He's like a character actor. He's always like one of these guys. You see him, you're like, oh, it's that guy.
I believe he was, he not a member of the clown gang in Batman Returns? I believe he was.
Could be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I always think of Death to Smoochie. When I see that guy.
Oh, okay. Everybody's got a different go-to for Schiavelli.
Yeah.
But he is cast as a Sikh character.
Okie dokie.
That's culturally sensitive. And he's got the worst accent. And it's just like, oh, God, why is this happening? this came out in 1999. And the basic gist is Jean-Claude Van Damme's character is... he was in a war somewhere. They might say Afghanistan, but I don't know if they do or not. They hint that he was in the military, and he was in the military with Danny Trejo's character, and he's going to find Danny Trejo's character, and he's driving through the desert to find him. Literally nobody, there's no roads in this place. They just drive. He's got this, there's the Indian brand motorcycle.
Okay.
Like the brand name.
Yeah.
So it's this beautiful, antique, amazing bike that he's driving across the desert, and then it just cacks out, and he just seems unconcerned, and then he just lies down.
Okie dokie.
I don't know. He starts drinking, then he gets super drunk, then he's talking to Danny Trejo, even though Trejo's not there. So he basically, the gist is he's trying to find Trejo so that like they became brothers in war sort of thing. And he wants Trejo to give him permission to kill himself because he saw so much horror in war that he just wants to end it. But he's bringing this motorcycle as a gift to Trejo, and then he's going to ask his permission to kill himself. And I didn't mention Danny Trejo, who is very clearly Mexican, is not Mexican in this movie. He is a Native American.
Hmm.
Great.
And it's like, yeah.
That's sometimes a thing that happens. It like more can, often yeah. than it should, yeah. but it does. It, that's
it,
a thing.
It gets
the amount of times it out. Should is never. So
yeah.
And the several times through the movie, Treo refers to people as amigo. So I'm not sure how that
what
transfer. Yeah, I don't know.
Did who Anyways. Wrote this? Did Jean-Claude Van Damme write this after getting kicked in the head?
Tom O'Rourke is the screenplay writer.
It's actually just Mickey Rourke using his pseudonym. Yeah. Again, after getting kicked in the head.
That's his only writer credit. That's the only thing he's ever done.
Oh, boy.
Do you think he also, like, executive produced and directed? And
Yeah, one of those.
Was it Tom York?
everybody, do the lazy eye. Mm-hmm. The film, it was directed by John G. Avildsen, who's the director of the original Rocky, like 1976 Rocky,
what?
And Karate Kid, 1984.
Oh my god.
But it says, this is the trivia in IMDb, due to too much tampering of his work, he asked for his name to be removed from the film. His real name appears in the end credits as director in the film, but is credited as Danny Mulroon on the poster, DVD case, and beginning credits of the film.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Is it tampering, or it just was a big pile of shit to start with? I don't know. So
he's like, look, I love money, but I also have a little bit of integrity, so...
Yeah. You know, I do have some things that I will have a legacy, and it will be tainted after this, so let's just...
Yeah. Yeah. So, basically, his motorcycle breaks down, he lies down, gets drunk, talks to Trejo, who's there or not there, and for the first, like... half, three quarters of the movie, I'm like, you know what? The reveal is Trejo's dead. And he always has been dead. And he's just been speaking. Because he always seems to appear out of nowhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you're just kind of speaking to this ghost and you want this ghost's permission kind of thing. Which probably would have been a better story.
Yeah.
But it turns out Trejo's alive. And then they just kill him.
Wait, anyway. Okay. So here's my question. The Trejo who shows up, like the real Trejo... Is he aware of what the Vision Trejo is doing?
I don't know. It just doesn't, nothing is said of that.
Okay.
So he's drunk and he's lying on the desert ground and all of a sudden the truck comes out of nowhere and there's the three inbred brothers of the desert region.
Every desert region has
that old trope.
Yeah. So they get out and they kick the shit out of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I mean, you would too.
The little brother who's their dad is Larry Drake, who is not there at the time, but he's a drug runner and he's like the evil power guy of the area. And he runs the whole town and demands like protection money from all the businesses. They get the little brother who's kind of the weak link to finish off, Van Damme and shoot him. And he just apparently just shoots the ground and doesn't kill him. And of course he comes back alive. Well, and this is where Trejo shows up, but I'm like, is Trejo actually here? I can't tell. And he carries him back to Trejo's house and looks after him, but I was like, oh, did he actually just walk on his own and this is all in his head? I don't know. So he gets better, and then he goes into town and then kills everybody.
Why?
But then all of a sudden you get to that point where you go into this town and he's getting revenge, even though the whole time he's like, I'm so sick of war. I don't want to kill anymore. But then
Except for these guys.
Except for the people that he wants to kill, and then he just loves killing everybody. But then all of a sudden, parts of it become weird slapstick. It's like the tone suddenly changes. They walk into a diner. He's got a bit of a love interest with this one waitress. And then he goes to leave, and he walks into the door, like, dong! And he's like, everybody just stops. And then he turns and winks, like, I meant to do that. And they all laugh. And I'm like, what the hell am I watching? What is going on?
We filmed this many takes, and that was the best one.
Pat Morita's character plays like this English guy that's in a suit that his wife or partner, whoever, Birdie, he keeps referring to Birdie. Oh, Birdie's going to show up any day now. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, the big guy from Street Fighter, right.
Birdie left 3 years ago, and he's like, oh, Birdie will be here any minute. She's going to get me a good job because I'm a handyman. And you're like, what the
fuck? And an English man.
And an English handyman. And sometimes not an English, his accent comes and goes. Yeah, and it's there's a
poor Pat Morita.
It's a very. It's not even a. It's not even a town. Like there's basically like a diner, kind of like a hotel that just has like these separate little cabin buildings. So there's the older couple that run that thing. The woman of that couple is like super religious, but like super religious, but like, you know, the, I don't know what you call it. Like they have snakes, you know, like the, that snake one handlers? In the southern states, the snake handlers, but they don't really set that up. All of a sudden she just walks out with a snake and you're like, what?
Yeah, you should know what's going on.
at one point they're fighting the bad guys and she throws a snake at the guy and she's like, because God demands vengeance or something, and then the snake kills him, and you're
checks out,
and the husband's like cowering in the corner, and she's all righteous through the first part of the movie, and at one point,
real quick, how far into the movie are we?
I'm kind of jumping around, but it's like, yeah, really. Let me just set up. The whole movie is based on Yojimbo by the Akira Kurosawa.
Oh, okay,
so. This is like a kind of a tropian thing that's been redone, like in spaghetti westerns and a ton of other movies, where it's the stranger comes to town, there's a bad guy running the town, the stranger plays, and there's kind of two factions, the stranger plays the two factions against each other, they start to destroy each other, then they go after him, and then he wins in the end kind of thing. That's the basic Yojimbo storyline.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you, I just...
No.
I had no idea where we were in the space of it.
Even while I was watching it,
I don't think anyone in the movie knew where they were. Was in the movie.
Yeah,
the desert.
At one point, when he goes to start like doing the Yojimbo split the factions up and pit them against each other, he goes down the highway where there's a biker gang, I guess, is the other faction. So he kind of sets it up that he's Larry Drake's guy, and he starts shooting them, and he saves two women that are being harassed and are about to get raped by this biker gang. But they're like in leather skirts, and they look very stereotypically like a 1990s hooker kind of thing.
Right.
He saves them.
Kevin McDonald takes them back, is their pimp.
And they go back to his hotel, and of course they're like, oh, we're so grateful. We want to have sex with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What?
I know. But before they get to that, they're in the room and they're the two of them. One of them is showering, talking to the other. And if you looked at IMDb, it's the first quote. Rose Del Vecchio. It's Rose and Carol Del Vecchio. I didn't even realize they're sisters.
Oh, the Del Vecchio twins.
Rose says, Van Damme's character's name is Eddie. Rose says, Eddie's got those gentle eyes, you know? And Carol says, yeah, he sure does. I wonder if he's circumcised.
Whew. So, the Rocky and Karate Kid director, did he read the script first?
I don't know. Oof. I don't know.
Oof.
Well, come on. I mean, Rocky, definitely not circumcised.
Yeah.
Daniel, what's his name?
With LaRusso? Ralph Macchio.
Yeah, he's I'd say 50-50. 50-50. He was, you know, the character was roughly born in the mid-70s, so I'd say it's 50-50.
I think he's double cut.
You mean like,
ouch!
I don't want to talk about it. So that religious woman, last little bit I'm going to throw out, that religious woman who is like, through the first bit of the movie, is like, have you been saved? And like, oh, just praise Jesus and all this stuff. Then at the point where the Del Vecchio twins hook up with Van Damme in the hotel cabin, she sneaks out. She always seems to have like a little... Mickey of booze, and she's like drinking that. She goes over to the window and watches them having sex. And then later on, the twins fall asleep. Van Damme gets up, comes outside, and religious woman is curled up on the ground sleeping outside the window. So he covers her with a blanket and then leaves.
All right. Okay. Sure. That's what you do.
And that's all I'm going to say. There's plenty of other stuff I could go into.
That's all you're going to say? You leave it at that?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It is. The whole movie is bizarre.
Okay, what's it called on Netflix again?
It's called Desert Heat.
So watch it tonight.
All right.
Make tonight a Blockbuster night. Go to Blockbuster, rent Desert Heat.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
You like that movie Heat? This is exactly like Heat, but in the desert.
I worked at Blockbuster probably several years after this would have come out, and I'm definitely sure that I rented this to people and looked at it like, what is this? And it came back. It came back to haunt me. And I don't know. Yep. I don't know how to feel about this.
Watch this now. Yeah, and cut.
All right,
and cut, and double cut.
Oh,
Ralph Macchio style.
That's right.
What the f***?
As we have discussed earlier, we're talking about the 20th anniversary, the history of Free Comic Book Day, which is the comic bookiest day of the year. I think scientifically proven, it really truly is. It's become just such like a regular holiday, a regular institution in the comic industry and comic shops all over. Just thought we could take a look back. I mean, we just had one. And Merc, you discussed you picked up some stuff at the last one. I didn't go the day of this year. I grabbed a few things. I was able to get Turtles put aside for me, which is good because apparently that one was gone like immediately.
Yeah, that seems like there's like probably a handful that were going to go super quick.
Yeah.
There was so many. There was I didn't even count the number of titles, but they had like two long tables just full, like chock full.
Yeah, when you compare this to like 20 years ago, when there was, you know, a small handful of available things, now it's like every company is putting out, even the small companies are putting out, it seems like half a dozen.
Yeah. Well, let's maybe jump into that first.
Yeah.
The first one was May 4th, 2002, so 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Often linked, and this never even clicked with me, that the release... or the comic book day is often linked to the release of a comic book movie.
Yeah.
So that first year was original Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
So very interesting to think that for almost 20 years, we've been having comic book movies come out in early May as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, specifically Marvel.
I saw the full list, and there was a couple years that didn't have it, but most of them did.
Early on.
So the first ones, May 4th, 2002, only had four comics. For Free Comic Book Day,
ooh.
Marvel had Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, which is actually a reprint from 2000.
Yeah.
Dark Horse had a one-shot of a Star Wars Tales, A Jedi's Weapon, Image with Top Cow, Tomb Raider 1.5 one-shot. And DC had Justice League Adventures, which is the first actual issue. It wasn't like a separate standalone thing. It was their first issue based on the animated series.
Okay. Right.
Right.
So that began.
Yeah.
And in that first year, they had over 2,000 stores that were involved in that giveaway, and 2 million comics were given away. And that's four publishers,
wow.
2 million comics. By year two, there were 29 publishers involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody saw that, like, whoa, we need to get on board on this, especially the small ones. Like, that's such... great advertising and just an easy way to reach such a wider audience of like, why don't we give this away? And then people pick it up and go, oh, I do like this. I'm going to go buy more. So
yeah,
makes sense.
So it was originally, while we're getting into its origins, it was originally proposed by a comic retailer by the name of Joe Field in 2000, like August 2001. It was like a letter or a column in Comics and Games Retailer magazine. Which obviously proved to be really successful. I think like a few years prior, and my source for a lot of this, there was an episode in like of a podcast by a NerdSync. I don't know if you're aware of NerdSync. It's a YouTube channel. I recommend it.
No,
quite good.
No.
Okay. So there was an episode on that from like around 2015 where he literally interviewed Joe Field. So I would definitely, if you're interested, recommend checking out that interview because it really goes into things from his side and the retailer side of things. Yeah, so anyway, so it was proposed then, he had proposed, like, sort of a, what he called a comics open house in, like, 1997, where he would just try to get people in, and they would, like, vote on their favorite comics and stuff, and could win prizes and stuff like that, which didn't really go anywhere, but the minute he suggested Free Comic Book Day, that was, became, you know, obviously that became a big thing, right? Everybody supported that, and then, by the next year, you know, by literally 2002 in May, it was kicked off, and... there was a few dates. Sometimes it wasn't always on May. Usually it was in May, but the second year it was in June instead of May. And I think, again, they usually tried to put it around the same time as, like, a comic book movie getting released. And I guess, like, 2003, yeah. 2004, there weren't really any comic book movies released in May.
Well, I think the second one was X-Men 2, I think it linked
with. Yeah, yeah. So I think that they...
yeah. They just moved it probably to link up with that, and
yeah. That's what they did in 2004. I think they put it to July, actually. I think because Spider-Man 2 came out in July that year, and then but that was like the 1 year aside from
two years ago. Codified yet, right?
Yeah. But like 2005, everyone, there wasn't any comic book movie coming out in May, but everyone was like, well, let's put it in May because I think they just sort of figured that May was a better time. You know, it was a better time to have it, and it just mostly has stayed there since. Though in 2020, it was sort of rolled out kind of over the summer. It was instead of in May because of obviously COVID, right? So that was kind of a one time. Well, not a one time, but you know, a rare exception since like the early years. You know, and again, it was also part of like them trying to find a way to bring people back into comic shops after the 90s. Because the speculator market bust, kind of, you know, and originally, actually, the original idea was, it was Free Comic Book Day, but they would just be giving out unsold copies of Youngblood. That's
nice.
That's a joke.
And if they continue doing that, they would still be giving those unsold copies of Youngblood out.
Yeah. Yeah.
20 years later.
But the thing is, yep, they want people to come back to comic shops. So they sort of thought, maybe we should give something else out. Anyway, sorry.
Unnecessarily mean to Youngblood, someone's favorite character. Some stupid idiot's favorite character.
But yeah, and it's also, again, comic book movies were picking back up again, and they're trying to capitalize on that, and I think rather successfully, I would say. I mean, comic books, you know, you say what you will about sales, they kind of go through ebbs and flows, but... you know, I believe if you look at comic sales over the last 20 years, it seems to often kind of, it's not staying all the way, but, you know, they're stable, you know, and they seem to be growing bit by bit every year, at least last time I checked, which isn't that recently. So do not quote me on this audio podcast that we're releasing publicly. Anyway, and yeah, it's usually like kind of one of the biggest sales days for most shops because people go in there and they might buy something else and, you know, they bring in kids and families and stuff like that that might not be there all the time. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And as far as like the ones that came out, like you're saying, like at the beginning, a lot of them were kind of like reprints. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, in that first four, the Marvel, so a quarter of them is a reprint.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that was uncommon where they would have, like, reprints or, like, little things like that. Often now, though, it seems like...
They're all brand new, yeah.
And often are kind of...
That's almost... I would tend to disagree with that practice.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, give out something that you already know is good that is gonna, you know... Maybe not necessarily is gonna hook new readers, but Free Comic Book Day comics are really... You know, they're the sort of thing that can be treated a little more roughly than a standard comic that one pays for, I think. It's the sort of thing that can sit in a doctor's office for 5 years, and some kid's going to pick it up and look at it, and that's going to be their first exposure to a comic, is my thinking. So if that's the case, make it a good comic. This is the Free Comic Book Day connector to some big Marvel event. That you're not going to know any of this, and it's very
there's
confusing.
There's a lot of that thing.
Where it's like it's just an advertisement for some maxi event.
Yeah, but I think the idea of I lean towards having a new one because if you're trying to the whole thing is Free Comic Book Day, we want to bring people in, and you're like, well, if you're just going to give me something I either already have or I could get at any point. It's been out for years.
Right.
Why would I go on that one specific day to get that when I can just go to your comic store anytime to get that?
Well, why can't there be room for both?
There can't. There can't.
All right. Well, okay. Okie doke. Asked and answered.
Well, yeah, and nowadays it really sort of seems like it's a new story, but it's usually like, you know, kind of like a prologue teaser for whatever event or whatever's going on. So like, you know, this year they had, they're teasing like this Judgment Day crossover, and DC had like Dark Crisis, and it was like a Spider-Man one that was like teasing whatever storyline is coming up in that, or crossover is coming on in that.
He's just teasing Spider-Man, like making fun of his haircut and stuff.
Yeah. Ooh, what is it, 1962, you nerd? He's crying.
You got fat hands, buddy. Like, oh, my hands are fat.
I'm walking on them all the time.
That's right.
Everybody knows you're Spider-Man, Peter Parker, because you have the same fat hands.
No one else would fit in those gloves.
And you forgot to take your gloves off.
That's right.
Aww. Idiot.
Well, it seems like it's Marvel and DC that tend to do that thing.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Here's an event. And so that's, and we've talked numerous times about on this show of just Marvel and DC eventing it to death.
Yeah.
For everything. So it's not surprising that they would take that and make it part of their event.
Yeah.
But then, like we said, like there's whatever, 30 other publishers or more now that are involved. And everybody else's has different stuff, so...
Yeah, and I mean, again,
There's room for everything. There's room for everything.
There's some... Exactly.
Yeah. And again, like, just going through the list, like you said, on the Free Comic Book Day website, and I think it's still, to this day, is sort of organized by Diamond, right? Like, they put everything out?
I believe
which
so.
Which is funny now that, like, you know, Marvel and DC are gone, but, like, they still got those Free Comic Book Day ones!
We're making zeros of cash!
And just going through like the sheer amount, it's like it absolutely bonkers how much stuff is out there. And I mean, again, I tragically missed this year. I was able to pick up a few things that were still there because obviously, like, you know, obviously they get so much that they'll just still have them available as long as they last, I guess. And locally, I know, like, locally the shops usually they either have like a limit or they you know, encourage donations, basically, if you're going to grab these things, which is nice. Because, I mean, again, they have people
I went by one of the local... We have two main local comic book shops here in where we live. And the one that I went to was... You can get two free right off, but if you make a donation and it would go to... What is it? The Animal Rescue or Humane Society or something of that sort. Then you can get another four. So it was like, oh, cool, I can get six. I threw $5 in for that, so that's fine. But
best of both worlds, right? Because it's like, you know, you're still, you're not like, you're giving money towards a good cause. I think that's a good practice. I don't know if that has, how shops everywhere do it or.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that, I'm assuming that other people do that. Like other places do, because like a lot of the local comic shops, they have the forums and stuff, and they all discuss how they're going to handle certain things. So I'm sure that came out of somebody somewhere doing that, and like, oh, that's a great idea, because we're going to be like, unless we have, you know, 7,000 people show up.
Yes,
like we have a lot of comics here. They got to go. So
okay, exactly. And I mean that, and I don't doubt it, because again, that's literally what built this was retailers communicating, you know, directly, like, through whatever forum that they had. I mean, that's how Joe Field pitched the idea, and that's why it's still around. So, yeah, I don't doubt that. And hopefully that's the case. I'd be curious if anyone listening, you know, wants to throw in a comment. What does your shop do? I want to know. I just want to know. It's not going to be anything to do with the episode, really. The show. I'm curious if there's anything similar going on elsewhere in the country/world.
There's, like, a local comic shop that makes you dance for it.
Yeah.
They're like, here's your two free ones. Now dance for me and you get another comic.
If you can eat this whole bowl of spaghetti in the next 40 seconds, then you get this issue of Spider-Man.
Man. Free spaghetti Spider-Man? That's the best idea.
No, the spaghetti is a test. It's not a treat. It's a test that you have to pass.
If you can chug this whole club soda without belching.
And what if you don't belch? Grow up.
We will not give you a free comic. We'll just laugh at you.
Yeah. Yeah. Now bang your head on a garage door.
And eat this Tide Pod.
Yes. Nice. And eat this Tide Pod. It's delicious.
Oh. Mm.
Full of ties. Yes.
It's like a little dumpling. They call them Tide Pods, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I call them that.
It's part of my cleanse. Mm-hmm.
Based on the loosey-goosiness of things in this chat, I think we might be ready to wrap it up.
Oh, what? What do you mean?
Really?
What?
Well, Free Comic Book Day. Long may you live. Thanks to, obviously, Joe Field for coming up with the idea, because it's such an amazing thing. It's cool, like, seeing, like, you know, cosplayers. It's almost like a mini Comic-Con in every comic shop around the world, basically, on one day a year. And that's a beautiful thing. So, and also, to mark the occasion, this is Free Comic Book Podcast Day, where you can listen to episodes of Zero Issues for free at zeroissues.com.
That's but only day. This
it's
one.
It's always Free Comic Day.
Only on, yeah. the, only on the day, which happens to be whatever day you're listening to this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Listen to them all.
What day? Today.
Today.
Whose house? Ren's house.
The great Spider-Man is so helpless he resorts to throwing rocks, eh? Looks like you're a born loser!
We are your wonderful hosts. All three of us. I am one of them. My name is Bri Kotick. You can check out my comic at welcometohereafter.com, or I'm on Instagram at BryKotyk. As well, we are, obviously, Zero Issues is on Instagram at Zero Issues Pod, I believe, is our tag in that one. It varies a little bit depending on what's available. Anyone who has a Zero Issues account and that isn't us, we will fight you.
Bri will fight you.
In a pit.
Yes.
Naked.
I mean... Yes, obviously, you need to be, you want to cut wind resistance, obviously. So, yes, of course I will be naked to fight them.
Grease yourself up.
Yes, yeah, totally. Speed. And also they can't hold on to me. You're trying to make this weird, but it's purely logical.
Well, here's the thing. They can't hold on to you, but you also can't hold on to them.
But I can throw bacon fat at them.
That's fair.
Well, I mean, but they didn't think ahead. They're fully clothed, I think, so you know.
So my name's Kyle Lees, and you can check my stuff out at thekylelees.com.
Thank you.
No, thank you. You can also check me out at thekylelees on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Do that.
I am Merc. You can find me at mercasylum.ca, MERKASYLUM.ca, Merc on Facebook. Merconaut Like Astronaut on Instagram. You can find all three of us plus our friend Ryan Mackett at the Thunder Bay Country Market.
Woo!
Saturdays from 8 until 1 and Wednesdays from 3:30 till 6:30. You can check out Ryan's stuff at Rymac _ creations. That's RYMACK _ creations.
On Instagram.
On Instagram. And thank you as always to Ocean City Defender, K. Preston Merkley for the music and interstitial stuff, and the friendship. The friendship.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend or an enemy about it. Leave a review on iTunes or do all that stuff. Do that stuff that you know helps that we don't ask often. But you know what? We're going to ask this week because, like Bri said, it's free. And we'll see you in the pit. We'll see you in the grease pit.
And that is the episode title.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They're going to have to wait the entire episode for see you in the grease
pit. Why is it called that? Oh, that's why. Good God. We're great. We're something. Yeah. Okay, I might, look at that. Blue cowl. This is not a drill. Blue. 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 Blue.